Gotta get all this technology going.
Oh!
Got the level right now? Turn it down a little bit. Great. So it's good to be with you this morning. Can we turn the levels down, like, a lot? Thank you. That's the problem, is this thing here. Good. So anyway, it's good to be with you. It's been a great weekend. It's nice to come back to my home area. I grew up in Connecticut. I did graduate from UConn. Sorry, UMass folks. But, yeah. And we are better than y'all at basketball. That's clear. Yeah. It's good to see some actual snow. But, you know, tonight I have to go home to 70 degrees and sunny in Southern California. It's going to be kind of rough. The topic is pain and suffering, and I'm going home to lack of pain and suffering there in California. So, yeah, apparently you're beginning a series asking some of the hard questions. You know, and, you know, I do Christian evidence kind of stuff, and people ask a lot of questions. And most of those questions, I think, are answered pretty easily. People say, oh, there's all these, you know, historical errors and fictions in the Bible, and well, that's just not true, okay? Or they say there's all science errors, and any scientist couldn't believe in the Bible, and talked about that Friday night. It's just simply not true. But there's a couple of questions, they're hard questions that Christianity raises. And one is the question of why is there pain and suffering in the world? I'm going to talk a little bit about the question of evil as well. So I'm going to start out, and I'm going to kind of trick you, so beware here. I'm going to take the role of an unbeliever or a skeptic. Hopefully, though, as a Christian, you've asked these questions yourself. So, number one, do you believe that God is all-powerful? Yes. That he could do whatever he wants? Yes. Okay. Do you believe that God is loving? In fact, so loving that love is defined by that God? Yes. Well, then I say your God is not real. Because in view of suffering, I mean, how could it be that a child would be born with a terrible defect, suffer for months, and then just die? What's up with that? If the God that you believe in is real, then how could there be cancer? I mean, you can't have it both ways. Either there's cancer because he doesn't care, he's not so loving as you think, or there's cancer because he really can't do anything about it. By the way, I'm going to respond to that question. I'm not going to leave you there. Okay? All right? But seriously, you have to admit that the unbeliever has a point. At the very minimum, you've got to admit they have a point. And I want to warn you up ahead of time, the answer, there's no simple answer to this question. If somebody says to you, oh yeah, the Christian answer to suffering, that's a piece of cake. Let me explain it to you. I'd say just walk away from that person. They don't know what they're talking about. It's not just a simple question. This is a hard lesson for me to do because this is emotional. And I'm not so in touch with my emotions. And I'm kind of mad at those college students. They made me cry, and I don't really like it when you make me cry. But there's some good questions. Is God the author of evil? If God created everything and evil exists, so that's a little bit confusing. Is suffering God's fault? One thing I would say for sure is there's a lot of suffering in this world. That's clear. Not much debate on that one. So we're going to ask about that. And there's different kinds of suffering. There's disease. You know, why would God create malaria? How's that fit in with this awesome, all-powerful, loving God? You know, the fact that somebody gets a cold, that doesn't bother me. But somebody gets lupus. And they honestly, it's a life of suffering. And, you know, cancer. I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out how that fits in. So there's sickness and there's physical pain. You know, somebody breaks their leg, that's tough. But really, that doesn't create a deep problem for me. But people who suffer from extreme agonizing pain over great periods of time, why doesn't God just shut that down? And there's poverty. You know, I was asked not too long ago, do they have poverty in America? I say, well, that's an interesting question. I don't know exactly how to answer that question. But there's people who suffer from poverty. And why does not God not kind of help out that situation? Now, we as Christians know that's kind of part of our job. But there's physical pain, but then there's emotional pain. Now, my parents said to me when I was a kid, they said, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. That's the biggest lie I ever heard. I'm sorry, parents, that's not true. Some of us have been betrayed. Some of us have had those we loved deeply turn their back on us. I was just having a time with a sister yesterday, and she was sharing the pain of how she trusted somebody, and that person basically destroyed her life. And how are we going to do with it? How do we deal with that? Violence, terrorism, genocide, you know? And then there's the chronic fear that results from that. There are people who live in a kind of fear. It just doesn't disappear, you know? There's a lot of suffering in the world. Physical pain, poverty, genocide. Yes, it did happen in Armenia, despite what people say. Sexual abuse, loneliness. You know what? There's a lot of suffering in the world. So, again, the skeptics ask, is that because God doesn't care? Or is it because he just really can't solve the problem? So why is there suffering in the world? And again, I'm gonna basically a two-part outline here. One is sort of the intellectual answer, which really is not the one we need. And then there's the emotional answer. So I'm going to talk about the intellectual response to the question of evil first and the question of suffering. And then I'll talk a little bit about the question of sort of the emotional response, which is really, I think, what we actually care about. So again, you know, the skeptic would put it in your lap. I mean, help me out here. It's got to be one or the other. And the first thing I would say is the idea of free will. By the way, the phrase free will is actually, those two words are not found in the Bible, all right? But the concept certainly is. I think about Deuteronomy 30, where God says, I put before you today life and death. Blessings and curses. And God begs us to choose life. You know, there's two trees in the garden, right? There was the tree of life, and then there's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And why did God put that tree in the garden? Was he trying to tempt us? And the answer is no, that's not why. Because you can't make somebody love you. You cannot make somebody love you. And there's the question is, why do we exist at all right? Well, according to the Bible, if the Bible's true, the reason we exist is because God wanted to love us. He wanted us to love him and love one another, and love gives a choice. And it had to be a real choice. It couldn't be, all right, I'll either give you $1 million or I'll punch you in the nose. It wasn't like that. So God said, you know, there's some stuff there, and it was desirable, right? It was knowledge that he didn't want them to have. And the reason he didn't want them to have that knowledge is because it wasn't good for them. You know, God took a risk, a big risk. And those who are parents, they know about this, right? It's risky being a parent because you risk the possibility of living a life of mourning. Because your children reject you, or they end up in prison, or they suffer incredible pain that you can't really resolve. And it was risky. But that's what love does. Love gives a choice. So here's my response to that argument that says God is either weak in that he can't not solve this problem of suffering, or he just doesn't care. He's not compassionate. If I'd say that is not correct. God is so loving and he's so powerful that he made us. And he gave us a choice. And Adam and Eve unfortunately made the wrong choice and brought suffering into the world. So one of the reasons, by the way, the reason evil exists is because we rebelled against God. But also, a lot of the suffering of the world is due to sin, rebellion against God. Think about it. How much suffering is caused by addiction? Are we going to blame God for our addiction? And I say to the skeptic, all right, what's your alternative to this? That we're automatons? By the way, everything ever God ever created obeys him fully. Right? The trees obey him. Even the dogs obey him, even if they don't obey you. They obey him. There's only one thing God created that doesn't obey him, and that's us. And it brought sin into the world. Addiction, lack of self-control, sexual perversion, sexual abuse, anger, violence, greed. On Judgment Day, are you going to blame God for that? Well, you could. Because he did create you. And he did give you the ability to rebel. But he did that because he loved you. Pride, arrogance, jealousy, desire for control and power, selfishness. You know, there's a moral law. That moral law is kind of like the law of gravity. And if you don't like the law of gravity, all right, you don't have to like it, but you kind of have to deal with it. And the law is this: when you sin, you bring suffering into the world. That law is about as avoidable as the law of gravity. Let's look at just quickly at Exodus 20, verse 5 and 6. Now, Exodus verse 20, 5 and 6, I warn you ahead of time, it's kind of a disturbing passage. All right, Exodus 20, verse 5 and 6. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of their parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Now, wait a minute. God is a jealous God? I thought God was a good God. God's a jealous God? Now, if I were to look around at other women, should my wife be jealous about that? Yes. God is a jealous God because he wants our love. And it says here that those who sin bring suffering to the third and the fourth generation. Now, whoever wrote Ezekiel 18, they should have had a conference call with whoever wrote Exodus 20. Because in Exodus 18 it says, the son does not bear the sin of the father, and the father does not bear the sin of the son. Now, here's what I've learned. When you find passages in the Bible which could appear at first glance to contradict, what you have is a deep knowledge when you figure it out. Because what Exodus is talking about here is in this life. Bottom line, if a man beats his wife, who suffers? Well, his wife suffers. The man suffers. His children suffer. Down to the fourth generation. In fact, I guess we knew this even if it wasn't in the Bible. And that's a principle. Now, I believe in Christ, we can end it at the second generation. Not realistic to think it ends at the first generation, honestly. But Ezekiel's talking about something different. He's talking about eternal consequences. The eternal consequences when we come before God is based on what we have done and what we've done alone. But the bottom line is, there's a lot of suffering in this world. Now, does that explain all of suffering? I don't believe it does. I don't believe it does. For example, let's just say, remember the tsunami a few years in Sumatra? Killed, around 200,000 people. So I've got a question. Whose sin caused that tsunami, which led to a lot of suffering, right? Now, the imam said the reason that tsunami happened is because people were not going to the mosque enough. I'm not sure God even wants people to go to a mosque. I'm not sure about that one. All right, so I would say most suffering in this world is not because God doesn't love us. In fact, believe it or not, it's because he loves us enough to give us a choice and to allow us to rebel against it if we choose. But then there's other causes of sin. I never use them. It's so bad. I have PowerPoints, but I never really actually use them. Okay, Thomas Aquinas, who talked about why there is free will. How a fully sovereign God could allow for us to have free will, because it seems like he's all in control. And what, like you said, basically it was God's sovereign will to give us sovereign will. All right, that's great stuff there. All right, other things. All right, great. And even in our conversation yesterday, this is my favorite picture explaining what free will is about. You know, God did not want, the Father did not want that son to go away, but he let him go. God will let you go. And when he lets you go, sometimes you end up in a pig pen. That particular son literally ended up in the pig pen. And sin is produced. But you know, sin is not the only cause of suffering. All right, a fun quiz question. What book in the Bible is about suffering more than any other? Job. How about in the New Testament? Ooh, 1 Peter. Okay, got it. Now, what's interesting is, in the book of Job, his friends say the reason he's suffering is because of his sin, right? And Job says, not true. I'm a righteous man. I don't deserve any of this. Now, who is right? They're both wrong. Job is relatively righteous, relatively, but you know what? The soul who sins is the one who will die, right? So they're both wrong. But anyway, not all sin is because of suffering. Despite, you know, John 9, where they said, who sinned, this man or his parents that he's born blind? All right, but you know what the interesting thing is from Job for me is the fact that at the end of the book, Job is not given the answer. We know the answer. We could read Job 1, and it's to the glory of God, but Job was never told the reason. Remember that. All right, you know, we say it's all part of God's plan. Well, how do you know that? I'm telling you, God's will is not always done. If God's will was always done, then why did Jesus have us pray, your will be done? You know, I'll just share a story about a very good friend of ours. She had left, my wife helped her to become a Christian. She'd left the church, bad marriage, bad situation. Her daughter was in all kinds of trouble. She sent her to live with us. We could fix her. We were on the other side of the country. She didn't come back to church, or we couldn't fix her. We went back to San Diego. We begged her to come back to church. I get a call one morning. Her daughter had been shot in the head by her drug addict boyfriend. That's tough stuff. And am I going to tell Elizabeth that that was God's will? That was not God's will. That was a horrible person doing a horrible thing. You know, that was a tough funeral. That was a tough funeral. Her two-year-old son was in the room when he shot her in the head. That's tough stuff. You know, what do you say to somebody like that? I had to do the funeral. And I just went to Ecclesiastes. You know, it says a time for this, a time for that. And I said, you know, there's a time for forgiveness, but right now is not the time for forgiveness. I'm not ready to forgive that guy. You know, there's a lot of suffering in the world. But not all suffering is due to sin. Some suffering is due to natural causes. God's plan was not that we were going to live forever. You got that, folks. None of us get out of here alive. And the world is actually a dangerous place. By the way, why did that tsunami happen? I'll tell you why that tsunami happened. It's called plate tectonics. All right, and plate tectonics, you know a little bit about that. That's kind of God's recycling system. Otherwise, the surface of the earth would become sterile. Without plate tectonics, we'd have no atmosphere. That would be a problem for us. All right, and so, you know, earthquakes happen. The pressure builds up, it releases. Probably a good idea not to live so close to the ocean, but, you know, who are we to judge? Because who lives close to the ocean in there is poor people, right? All right, so that's why it happens. And so the skeptic says, what's wrong with God that he would do that? My response to that is kind of like what God said to Job near the end of the book. You got a better world? Can you invent a better universe? If you can create a better universe than one that has plate tectonics, which gives us an atmosphere and, you know, it makes the earth fertile, if you can do, Go ahead, make a better universe. Be my guest. I'm saying God did a pretty good job. And his goal is not that we live forever. His goal is that we live with him. The problem is not suffering. The problem is not death. The problem is sin and separation. Well, what about hurricanes? You know, why would God create hurricanes and kill thousands of people? The answer is it's called weather. You know, it's funny. The earth is round. Now, why is the earth round? Because gravity makes planets. And gravity only makes round planets. You know what I'm saying? Source of energy over here, planet over here, round. Now, if the earth was cylindrical, it would work better, you know, as far as getting the heat, you know, equally around. But it's round. And if it were not for weather, it'd be ridiculously hot at the equator, horribly cold at the pole, and it's kind of cold here right now, but never mind that. So weather kind of spreads all that heat around. It's a great plan. And if you don't like it, feel free to invent a better universe and then actually make it. You know, I personally, I'm going to be with Job and I'm going to say, amen, God, you said so, it's good enough for me. But the bottom line is, there's suffering in the world. Most of it's due to sin. And other suffering is due to natural causes, even diseases. And by the way, who said that suffering is evil anyway? Whoever said that? All right? I don't think suffering is evil. All right, all these slides just go through. I might as well just not even have the slides, right? Okay, great. Plate tectonics, weather, bacteria. You know, pain is actually a good thing, all right? Hopefully we got that down. If it were not for pain, no boy child, or probably girl child either, would make it to 4 years old, all right? Parent says, don't touch, you'll get burned. Don't touch, you'll get burned. Don't touch, you'll get burned. What do? They touch, they get burned, and they don't touch anymore. If it were not for pain, I would have burst my stomach. All right? How about this? If it were not for pain, there'd be no joy. If it were not for suffering, there'd be no joy. In fact, heaven is a place that I don't fully understand, because if I think there's no suffering in heaven, or maybe there is, but it kind of, you know, no tears. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't say no tears. It says he wipes away every tear. Because how can we have joy without suffering? It just doesn't work that way. Psalms 30, verse 9, weeping endures for the night, but joy comes in the morning. John 9, 1 through 3, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus says, it was for the glory of God. I bet there are people in this room right now, if God had not allowed them to suffer, they would be lost in their sins right now. And suffering is not the problem. In fact, suffering is part of how we reveal Christ. You know, in Romans 8:28, it says, all things work out to the good of those who love him. By the way, do me a favor. Don't pull that out on somebody who's suffering right now. All right. Don't pull out that scripture. All right. Just kind of wait for a little bit later. Somebody who's, you know, got a cancer diagnosis. Don't pull out Romans 8:28 on them. Everything works out for the good. So, man, this cancer is going to be good for you. And so you just need to deal with that. I don't think that's really the right approach there. Romans 5:3, suffering produces character and character produces hope. Without suffering, we remain weak. You know, no pain, no gain. It's actually true. I've got a great way to solve suffering in your life. Sit on a couch and do nothing. In fact, doesn't the Bible say all those who seek a righteous life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted? Suffering is not the problem. The world says it's the problem, but it's not the problem. The world says death is evil. But death is not evil. Death is a transition, hopefully to something better. Now, if you're an atheist, then you're dead like Rover, dead all over, all right? But that's not what we're talking about here. All right, one more passage on this whole idea about evil not being so bad, or suffering not being so bad. This is my favorite one, Colossians 1:24. No, we're not dead like Rover, dead all over. By the way, all dogs, I don't know if they go to heaven or not. That's, you know, the movie, right? All dogs go to heaven? I don't know if they do or not, all right? Whatever's in heaven's better than what we got here, so it's going to be all right. Colossians 1:24. This is an interesting passage. It says here, now I rejoice in what I'm suffering for you, and I fill up in my flesh what is still lacking in regard to Christ's afflictions for your sake. It seems almost blasphemous. He's saying Christ's sufferings are not sufficient. Because as we suffer, we come to know Christ. So suffering is not evil. So summarize part one. By the way, part two is only going to be about 10 minutes. Don't worry. There's some people suffering right now with those kids in their classes. But then again, it's good for them, right? It's good for them. By the way, I want you to know, after this this lesson, you're not invited to come up and punch me in the face in the name of suffering being good for me, because masochism is not what we're talking about here. So I'm going to have to post this outline later, because I keep getting behind on my PowerPoint. These are some reasons why suffering is actually a gift. It's one of the most wonderful gifts for us, not even just as Christians. All right. So most suffering is the result of sin. And the reason there's sin is not because God is not compassionate or powerful. It's because he loves us enough to give us a choice. But let's not have some simplistic answer here, because the bottom line is there's natural causes as well, and a few other things like people's foolishness not to prepare for that. But now I want to talk about the emotional response to suffering. That's, I think, what we actually care about. What is the Christian response to suffering? What is the Hindu response to suffering? See, Hindus teach that suffering is an illusion. It's maya. It's not real. Who does most of the benevolent works in India? Christian groups. There's some wonderful Hindu people. Don't get me wrong. What's the Buddhist response to suffering? The Buddhist response to suffering is dispassion, is to remove yourself emotionally from that suffering. How's that do at solving the suffering problem? Who does most of the benevolent works in Buddhist countries? It's Christians. What's the Muslim response to suffering? Well, who does most of the benevolent work in Muslim countries? The answer is Muslims. Because one of the five pillars of Islam is almsgiving. But there's a problem. Because in Islam, it is illegal to use any of those alms to help anybody who's not a Muslim. What's the Christian response to suffering? It's compassion. Why do we have compassion? Because suffering is evil? No. Because that's what love does. That's what Jesus did. Jesus had the greatest compassion ministry in all history. Jeremiah 22, 15 and 16. Does it make you a king to have more and more cedar? Did not your father have food and drink? He did what was right and just, so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor needy. He didn't just give them stuff. He defended them. And so all went well with him. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? James 1:27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows and the distressed, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Proverbs 14:31. He oppresses the poor and shows contempt for their maker. But whoever is kind to the needy honors God. We're not talking about just helping people. We're talking about creating social justice. Isaiah 58, 6 through 7. Is this not the kind of fasting I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of yoke, to set the oppressed free, and to break every yoke. One of my favorite illustrations is from Julian. Jeremiah 12, 1. I'm going to just throw that out there, all right? This is a great one. Jeremiah 12, 1. Jeremiah says, you know, God, you are always right. You are always just. All your decrees are always right. But I'm really mad at you right now because I don't agree with what you did. That's one of the beauties of God. If you're mad at God, just tell him. He wants to hear. Jesus is the perfect high priest. Hebrews 5, 8 and 9. He learned obedience through suffering. He didn't learn in the sense of, you know, 5 plus 5 is 10. He experienced through suffering. And it says he became a perfect high priest. Wait a minute, Jesus was not perfect? Well, you have to understand the definition of perfect in that context, complete. Because what is a priest? A priest is one who communicates between us down here and God up there. Mm-hmm. And a priest has to speak the language of God and the language of mankind. Before Jesus came down, he definitely had the God language set. That was not a problem. But he came down here and he suffered in every way just like us. That is why he is a perfect high priest. Every pain, every suffering you've experienced, he knows exactly about it. Hebrews 5, 1, I think. Metropathia. Compassion, feeling together. Jesus wept. Why did he weep? Because Lazarus was dead? No, because Mary and Martha were suffering. He said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I long to gather you in as a hen gathers in her chicks, but you would not accept me." The Christian response to suffering is compassion. It's empathy. Not because suffering is evil. It's not. But because of love. Matthew 9, 36 through 38. Maybe we'll end out there. Hopefully we will. Is it in Ephesians where Paul says, and now my final point, and then he has three more chapters? That's in Ephesians somewhere. Matthew 9, 36. This is one of my favorite compassion passages. Starting verse 35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. That is Springfield, Holyoke, Chicopee, all these other places. South Hadley, and is there a North Hadley? Yeah, and then the other Hadley as well. And if there's an East Hadley and a West Hadley, there's suffering, there's helpless people. Says, and then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field." This is a great evangelism passage. But look at the context. Wow. What's he sending them out to do? To show compassion. To feel with people. Our goal is not to end suffering. Our goal is to bring people to Christ. But we have compassion. That's what Jesus had. You know, if you want to help somebody deal with the suffering question in their life, you know what's the best thing you could probably do? Help them to become a Christian. Help them to become a Christian. Because you know that third and fourth generation thing we're talking about, right? I believe not that Christians live lives without suffering, but that unnecessary suffering, that's the result of sin. I believe the best thing you do to help somebody deal with the issues of suffering in their life is to help them come to Christ. So a couple of quick pieces of advice. All right. First of all, we need to be a church that is a compassion ministry church. All right. And you need to be involved in that. And we need to live lives of integrity. You need to understand that you may not have the answer. In fact, to the day you die, you may not know why. But you know, the skeptic says, the God you believe in, the all-loving and all-powerful God, can't exist because consider the suffering. Consider cancer. Consider murder and genocide. Surely God either is uninvolved or unpowerful. You got to admit, it's a good question. It's a good point. In fact, when I said that, hopefully you went, yeah, wow, that's a tough one, because it is a tough one. But I believe Christianity offers the only viable answer to that question. Otherwise, it's senseless. It's meaningless. And it's not our job. The answer is that the reason there's suffering in the world, and evil for sure, is because God loved us so much that He created us so He could love us, we could love Him, and we could love one another. Brothers and sisters, in view of that, let us be a compassionate people. I thank you very much.
John, bro, I want to thank you on behalf of the Pioneer Valley Church of Christ. We thank you for all you've done to serve us this weekend. Really, Paul, let's give him another hand.
35 minutes.
Thank you. Those of you who don't know, Friday night, he's got a PhD in...